big backyard. For Bunnings Warehouse, where lowest prices are just the beginning. And Backer Design stressless recliner, free fabric to leather upgrade.
Wow, we're surrounded by Laurens, Millie. We had Lauren Hilbert up at the fires, and now here's another Lauren with the surname Burns. So it's all...
That's all creepy.
Lauren, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries. And you've brought in a book, and it's called Food from a Loving Home, a collection of vegetarian recipes by Lauren Burns.
That's me. Yes.
Now, the first thing is, you haven't got on a bandwagon. You haven't seen the vegetarian bandwagon go by and jumped on.
No, I haven't. I've actually been vegetarian since I was three.
Three?
Yeah, three.
So no, you wouldn't have been able to make that choice then.
No, I didn't. My parents became vegetarian, and you know, since my dad has since turned back to eating meat. But you know, it's something that I just always kept doing. And you know, as I was an athlete and training and competing, it was something that I put a lot of effort into. You know, having an athletic lifestyle and having a vegetarian diet, but you know, in our household, my husband eats meat and, you know, I don't mind cooking meat. So it's not, you know, I'm not completely a purist about not having it in the home, but it's just a personal choice.
That, yeah. And the difference between vegetarian and vegan, I mean, vegans, you know, that's, you don't eat eggs, do you?
Yeah. So no dairy, no eggs. Yeah. No animal products. So that's a little bit more extreme. It is a lot of effort.
Too much hard.
Yeah. But I mean, we're obsessive vegetable growers, Darren. And yeah. I mean, we all know they're good for us, but you know, you get to that point and, you know, Lauren is an international competitive athlete, my body doesn't need the same sort of attention and fuel that yours did.
It was a real challenge, and it was also just putting effort into, you know, making sure that everything was prepared, you know, eating early so I'd have my main meal in the middle of the day, and then I'd just have something light after training, you know, because at the end of the evening, you know, I was training about 7 hours a day.
Yeah.
Which, even saying that, I can't believe it was even true, but really, 7 hours a day, and then, you know, I'd get home at 9:30 at night, and, you know, you'd just be exhausted, so you'd have to have something that was really nutrient rich.
How many times a week? Because you've got to have a rest day sometime.
Yeah, so that was 5 days a week.
Yeah.
And then Saturdays would just be one, like a 3-hour session, and Sundays off.
Oh, yeah. Right. Still a hell of a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was dropping. I had a weight category too, so I was dropping to under 49 kilos. I have actually bought my medal
49?
In.
So you won gold medal in taekwondo. It was the first time that the sport had been part of the Olympics, is
that right? Yeah, that's right. First time. It was a debut for our sport, so it was a really exciting time. And as I said, the weight division. So normally there's 8 weight categories in taekwondo, and I'd always drop down. So I used to sit about 55 kilos. I'd drop into 51, so that was a challenge. But for the games, there was only 4 weight divisions, so I had to go either 49 or under 57.
So
we went for 49.
You'd have been mincemeat.
Yeah. Well, no, 49 was the best competitive weight division for me. So believe it or not, I was even tall in that category. And so the diet even played even a bigger part, because having to make sure that you're a low weight like that. So I did a bone density scan, and they said it was unsafe to ever sit at 49 kilos.
Whoa.
So I just had to drop down, and then just on the day. So I think I was only 49 for like 2 hours overnight.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Wow. So it becomes a bit of a science.
And I love the fact that you do have the medal, and you don't. It's not in a cabinet or a museum. You just carry it around with you, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I do a lot of speaking, and I always take it with me and throw it out. And that's the thing that not throw it out sounds wrong. Doesn't throw it out to the audience.
Pass around.
You know, the response that I get from people being able to touch it is, you know, the far better than having it, like you say, in a cabinet or in a safe, because, you know, then no one gets to enjoy it. So it's got a few marks on it. And
it's had a life. It got nicked, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It got stolen from my house.
Who nicked it? And what happened there?
Well, I think it was just a random break-in, because they took, you know, odd things. Like, you know, there was so much stuff that was left, but they took, you know, a pair of jeans, and they took, you know, a bottle of vodka out of the freezer. So they were just kids, you know.
Yeah.
But, and I was near my, you know, with all my jewellery and stuff like that, and they took all of that. And I think they probably just saw it and went, oh, it's gold, let's take it, and ran off with it. But then we did a bit of a media campaign, and I think once they realised that, you know, it's only my medal, you know, it's got my details on it, and they can't melt it down, and, you know, no one's going to buy it. And then so they just handed it back. So it was.
Did they catch them, or did they just hand it back anonymously?
They handed it back anonymously.
Did they want a police station or?
They actually took it to a TV station. So I think they were wanting a.
You'll never get in trouble there.
Yeah, that's right.
You didn't get
that. They were going to get cash.
It was weird not having it, actually, when I got, you know, because I was overseas and I got home, and it was like that sense of going, wow, it's gone, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, the memory I still have and the experience and everything. But it is such a big part of, you know, having that. that medal and being able to share it and show it to people all the time. So it was good to have it back.
So author, athlete, what else can we... Let's get to the gardening part.
Yes.
Because you're a keen gardener.
Well, I am a keen gardener and I'm certainly no expert, but I've always dabbled in... I'm very big on, you know, food has been a huge part of my passion and my life. And so I've always planted vegetables and herbs and had things around the garden. So I've, you know, dabbled quite a bit and had some successes and many failures. And I, you know, I think there's nothing better than being connected to your garden and being connected to your food and to be, you know, there's a huge satisfaction that you get from being able to go out and pick some lettuce and bring it in and have a salad straight away or to walk out and go, oh, what am I going to make for dinner and draw some inspiration from the garden.
Yeah. Do you, I mean, the way you plant as a nutritionist and a naturopath as well, so you probably think about your garden in a really different way to other people. When you go out to pick, do you pick, you know, colours? Do I need a bit of this and a bit of that in my dinner to make me well, or do you just pick what's ready? I mean, how do you...
Well, a bit of both, and I often plant things that, you know, I'll read up on something and I'll know that that's really great, you know, and some things, you know, I've planted, you know, feverfew, it's great for headaches and migraines and all of that, but, you know, it's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah. So, you know, it does smell pretty bad.
Some things I put in for health reasons and, you know, wouldn't touch it with a you know, barge pole, but other things, you know, I often do plant for colour and I put, you know, things like, you know, nasturtiums that I can chuck in the salad and plant, you know, just things that I also, I'm very big on, you know, if I go to the market, I often buy vegetables that I think, I'm going to try this out. And so I guess I sort of do that with the garden. I think I'll try it and see how it works and you know, experiment. And, you know, we have, it's so amazing to have, you know, the internet. We can just Google something and look up, how am I going to cook with this? And you have, you know, all these recipes
That's right. You can try and
experiment with.
Yeah. Now, you're married now, as you said, and you've got children as well.
Yeah, I've got two kids.
How
Mac
old are they?
Piper, 3 and 4.
Mac and who?
Piper.
Mac and Piper.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Cute.
3 and 12.
3 and 4.
Oh, 3 and 4.
Four. Very close together.
Okay, yeah.
So they love helping out in the garden as well. And I, you know, I'm very passionate about, you know, cooking for kids as well. And that connection to between with kids knowing where their food comes from. Cause I used to do a lot of schools when I was an athlete and, you know, it'd be lunchtime and all you can hear is the crinkling of packets. So,
yes.
You know, there's a lot more awareness now. We're sort of going back to these, you know, nude food and having
nude food.
No wrappers.
No wrappers, yeah.
Dr. John Tickell says don't eat anything that has been changed from what it originally was.
Yeah, well, I think that's a really good, you know, message that eating things as unadulterated, you know, in their whole form, it's sort of like a good rule of thumb. It's pretty simple. And Michael Pollan, the food activist, you know, he says, you know, eat food, not too much, mostly plants, you know, and I think that's a really good rule of thumb as well.
And Michael Pollan, you know, internationally famous food activist who started as a garden writer.
Did he
so
really?
His first couple of books were a book called Second Nature, which was exploring, you know, his path into gardening. And then he wrote this fantastic book, The Botany of Desire, which is made into, you can actually YouTube this documentary, which was made into a television documentary where he profiled 4 crops and how they'd influenced the world. The potato,
yeah.
The apple, the myth of Johnny Appleseed,
Johnny
which is
Appleseed.
One of the most famous. We've done that on this show, actually.
William Tell with apple on the head.
Yeah, absolutely. Hemp was one of the other crops that he profiled and just fibre and then it's sort of movement into being this thing that's very evil when it was originally it was quite a, you know, an important crop, and then the tulip, which tulip mania in Holland,
where tulips are worth millions, equivalent of millions of dollars,
more money than we'd ever have in our lives,
yeah.
And so yeah, I mean this food connection to gardening is just, and you know it's so entrenched in what we do and what we eat,
yeah.
And how we grow it.
And we've got, there's so many farmers markets and things like that now, so you can actually, even if you're not growing your own food, you can get out there and be closer to the people that are, so it's not necessarily just going to the supermarket. And you know, it's also with, you can talk to people about, so you know, I'm quite big on organic food and not having things that are sprayed, but it's not just organic, it's not sprayed too, or not heavily sprayed. So if you're at a farmer's market, you can say, oh, do you spray this? And they might say, well, I do use this and I use that, but I don't use blah, blah, blah. So you kind of know a little bit more about what's in it, what's, you know, where it's come from.
Yeah. 96900693. Lauren Burns is here if you'd like to talk to Lauren. Also, if you'd like to talk about any special recipes, maybe you're a vegetarian and have been for life. Just before the break, are your children vegetarian? Have you gone down that same road?
My children are vegetarian, but, you know, they're starting to get to an age where they can make a choice. So the other day we were making some, you know, egg and bacon pies, and my kids were having egg and not bacon pies.
Right.
But my son started taking some of his dad's bacon, and, you know, that was all right. So, you know, we'll see wherever that goes.
Excellent. 96900 693 in the Big Backyard.
The Big Backyard.
For Backer Design, stressless recliner, free fabric to leather upgrade, and Bunnings Warehouse, where lowest prices are just the beginning.
And Julie joins us. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, guys. My son, who turns 16 today, he is such an inspiration. About 6 months ago, he decided to become vegetarian, and in doing so also wants to give up chemicals and everything like that. So he's got himself the most beautiful veggie patch going, and it's so lovely. He's out there all day. He just loves the garden, loves eating the produce from it. It's so nice to see him come in and make himself a big bowl of salad. And
wow.
It's such a good change. You know, when I was 16, yeah, and we all became vegetarians, you know, for a time, which I was for quite a few years.
Did you?
All anyone ate was chips, you know. They think they could just eat potato chips, and that's being vegetarian. But there's such a new awareness for kids about nutrition and health, and you know, gardening is that key thing that's done that, I think.
And when you put that effort in and you plant a seed and then you see it grow, you know, you're much more likely to try it. Whereas if it's just, you know, your parents saying, try this, try that, try, you know, it doesn't always have a greater appeal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at 16, I think I was sneaking into the Doncaster Shelby Town Hotel for a pot of chicken schnitzel. I
mean, yeah,
kids these days growing
kids
vegetables.
These days.
What's he growing, Julie?
Oh, he's got radish, zucchini, pumpkins, black cabbage, tomatoes, all different colours, beetroot, carrots, scorzia. Oh, there's one vegetable I can't even pronounce the name. I don't think I've ever even eaten it.
No, I know what you say. It's that root vegetable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Julie, you should get in touch with. Tell him to send an email through to Gardening Australia, and I'll shoot him an email through the week. I'd love to see some pictures of his garden.
Yes, and also for his birthday today, Julie. Not many 16-year-olds will appreciate this, but I'm sure he will. Huh. I've got the 2-litre Sea Soul Power Pack, which includes the Sea Soul refill, the power feed, soap and gloves for the best garden in town. Don't forget the sea salt. That's coming his way, Julie.
Oh, thank you very much. That's awesome.
What's his name?
Julian.
Well, say hi to Julian and good luck with his veggie patch.
Thank you very much.
To Anne, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Darren and Millie.
Oh, how's your voice going, Anne?
Oh, I had throat surgery last year.
Oh, wow. No.
And still, so I'm lucky I can talk at all.
Yeah, well, still a bit on the croaky side there.
I think the warm weather didn't help.
Mm. Yeah.
My husband and I were trying to get our kids out into the garden and just be responsible. We've got raised veggie beds to be responsible for a little patch, and we got a list together of easy things for their age groups to be able to grow so they won't be disappointed, hopefully. We're not quite sure when to start planting, and also with our two eldest kids, we don't want them to be lazy because what they're going to be growing is more slower growing because of their age and because of their, you know, their boys. Even though the youngest ones are boys too, they're more excited about growing, you know, some flowers and some herbs, and then the next age group, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I said I'm going to sow some radish seeds today, and they're always a good one with little kids because they'll germinate within a week. They can be harvesting within a month, and they're really good fun. But, Lauren, I mean, I reckon your kids, are there particular things that they love to grow?
Oh, they really love anything. So really, they love the process. So they love digging, they love, you know, banging things, they love, you know, moving a wheelbarrow around. So they also, I think the thing about being out in the garden too is that kids always love being around family. You know, they love it when you're out there as well. So it's just another, it's like, you know, I always say, you know, in our house, you know, the kids are always where I am. They're always in the kitchen or around the lounge room, or, you know, they won't just go off and play in their bedrooms. And so it's the same outside. So, you know, they love sprinkling the seed. So there's we're sort of like, it doesn't really matter where the process comes. And so there's some things that you know, you can watch and you do get a good response straight away. But if you start the process and it's ongoing, then there's always something happening. There's always something growing, or there's something going in, or there's soil to be turned or mulching to be done. And
the digging is a big one. At the show last year, I did workshops, and there was a couple of garden beds that someone else had planted up, but the space was mine for the weekend. So I actually unplanted one of the garden beds and dragged it out into the middle of the area. And it was actually, well, these kids, you know, there's all of this glitz, glamour, lights, sugar, all of this stuff around them. But they would walk over to this box of dirt stick their hands in and play in there.
If they find a few worms, you know, they often go worm hunting. And, and, you know, we have a big, you know, I'm quite, you know, I think soil quality is so important when you're growing veggies. So, you know, we're always putting things into the soil and turning the soil, or, you know, putting mulch in. And, you know, so there's always something happening as well. Mm. And they just love to get their hands dirty, and they make things, they come up with lots of stuff around that too.
Now, Lauren, back to your book. This book being called Food from a Loving Home, your favourite recipes, where did you come by them? Are they just ones that have evolved over the years of your existence?
Yeah, well, I've always loved cooking, and my mum was an amazing cook. And so I was pregnant with Piper at the time, and I really wanted to, you know, put my head into something. And so I thought, you know, great way to share some of my favourite recipes. And so I put them all together. So, it's really a collection of my own personal recipes and a lot of family and friends' recipes.
So, and we go breakfast, and then we head right through the day. We get to the main section, and then we keep going. And I thought, gee, we've hit desserts early. But then towards the end, you get to an area where it shows you the basics of what to do, like,
section with salad dressings, pastries, and, you know, all the, you know,
satay sauce, a good gravy.
A good gravy, yeah, good Napoli sauce.
Veggio gravy
good cheese sauce.
They are hard to come by, yeah.
Homemade pasta tells you how to do that.
Yeah, make your own pasta from scratch. There's a whole, I mean, you know, and in the recipes you can obviously use a good quality store-bought pasta, but if you want to tackle it, homemade pasta is just amazing.
I've never tackled it.
And again, that's a great thing that the kids love doing. You know, I've got, they wind the pasta and, you know, they love it.
And how to assemble a tortellini.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I actually love, I'm doing some workshops coming up actually with the Stephanie Alexander program, but, you know, we're doing a whole one on wontons, and I've got a real thing about, you know, homemade dumplings and wontons and tortellinis, and, you know, and I find often that they're, you know, they can be disappointing unless you find a good one. So the best way sometimes just to make your own.
And I think it's, you know, it is about, you talk about process, and that's what gardening is, you know, like I think when people, sometimes they come running in at like a bullet a gate, and they want this result thing. They're used to everything is like, oh, but I do this and I get this out of it. But the beautiful thing about gardening and cooking and food is process. Mm. You know, it's the time spent. It's the time spent, you know, candying those kumquats. That was, you know, it was a day that I spent with my friend picking, talking, washing. You know, it's the time that you spend doing these things that is just as pleasurable as the result that you get.
We have a day. I get together with a couple of friends, and we probably do it about once a month, and we call it a making day, and we'll just make something. And, you know, it's evolved as we, you know, when we were younger and we didn't have kids, we'd make, like, you know, however many litres of chili jam or, but, you know, we'd take on really big projects and make too many and make all these, you know, crazy, they always got something would go wrong. But now, you know, we've got families, and we often make things like for the evening meal. So we'll make a whole batch of, you know, spanakopita that we can freeze, or tarts, or, you know, different things. And it's just that thing of getting together and making something and preparing it, you know, putting it in the freezer, and then you get home and you've got some meals planned.
And then right at the back of the book, I get to a section called Home Apothecary.
Yeah.
Now, I can make my own moisturiser.
You can. And it is well worth it, actually. But, yeah, I making things at home, I think it's a bit of a dying art these days. So, you know, with my naturopathy background, I thought I'd put some things in there about, you know, making things from scratch and some home remedies.
But where do I get 60 grams of emulsifying wax, and what is that?
Well, it's a binder, so it helps, you know, so there's emulsifying wax and beeswax and things like that. And so you can get them from, there's a place in Fitzroy called Aroma, and you can Google it and you'll just find somewhere that'll supply it to you.
Yeah.
And it's actually not that hard. So, you just melt it down in a saucepan. So once you've got the ingredients, it's pretty easy. And actually for Christmas presents this year, we did spoon butter, and we used just beeswax and coconut oil.
What is spoon butter?
And, well, it's something to rub into into all your wooden spoons and your boards.
Ah.
And you just, again, it's just like it's mostly coconut oil and then a bit of the beeswax. And we just melt it in a saucepan and we put it in jars and gave it to everyone. So you rub it all over your chopping
wood.
Board.
Yeah.
Yeah, or your wood. And then you leave it overnight and then you just rub it off. And it's just a little bit more long lasting than, say, just rubbing it with olive oil.
Perfect.
Yeah.
It's time for the plant of the week.
Plant of the week for Fulton's Garden Supplies, Hawthorne, Wanturna, Cheltenham.
And the plant of the week, Millie, this week?
Is hibiscus. I'm always distracted by Fulton's because I used to use them as a gardener and they have got the best trucks.
The green ones?
The old trucks.
Old trucks.
Yeah, deliver your soil. If you're lucky, you get these beautiful old trucks and back up and dump that 4 metres of mulch that you had to move
with
up
yellow
and down the stairs with the wheelbarrow. Yeah,
what sort of? Actually, that's a good question. Just before we look at the plant of the week, my vegetable garden that I built, I showed you photos of it, I used a lot of my own compost and a lot of pea straw. Pea straw.
Mm.
And over the duration, it's compacted and it's rotted and it's died down and I've still got a fully exposed, cut to the chase. I need some soil.
You need stuff.
I need stuff. What's the best mix for a raised vegetable garden in so far as soil is concerned?
Well, all the different soil yards will have their own thing that they will recommend. So they're all
what would you
usually
get?
Sand-based mix. I'm a stingy, stingy gardener. You know, I am the thrifty gardener.
Yeah.
So I don't get anything.
No.
So I find it. So do you know what I did for a big raised bed where at the bottom half of it I went to the soil yard and they gave me all the bits they scrape into a pile at the end of the day?
Right.
That's just all the bits. That was the bottom half. And then I did layers of lucerne, manure, all of that stuff up on top. So you just continually add.
Keep on adding.
Different stuff.
I'm running out of stuff
to
add.
Different stuff.
Yeah.
I know, it is tricky. But you will find most soil yards will sell something specific that you could grow on hibiscus in. We do need to talk about hibiscus because of all the plants that look good in the heat, if you kick around, the hibiscus are absolutely top performers.
Native or the...
I think both. I'm a fan. I've just been to Sydney for a week and there's a plant, the Hibiscus tiliaceus rubra, which comes from the north of Australia.
Yeah.
Round leaf. Tiliaceus means it's got a tilia-like leaf. And, I'm in love with that native hibiscus. So I can't get enough of it. But
and the other one is allegan.
No one can pronounce that word.
No.
Aleogyne. Some people say aleogyne.
Aleogyne, yeah.
Hughleyi. There's a number of species of the native hibiscus. But look, I mean,
there's a Jeff Hughleyi.
Is there?
Yeah, that's Jeff Hughley.
Yeah. But look, they're a great plant. Great for hedging. Great for a sunny spot. Bit of water and feed, and you get this tremendous, tremendous colours. I think you can even eat some of the hibiscus flowers. Although could be just making that up.
No,
and
you
could poison
you
yourself.
I don't know, but my cousin's got some hibiscus undies, and she says whenever she wears them, it's always
very fun.
What's with the hibiscus undies?
I don't know, but she said whenever she wears the hibiscus undies, it's always a good day.
What, with the flower on them?
Flowers on them,
Printed on them.
Oh, printed on them.
Interestingly, that hibiscus tiliaceus, which comes from the north of Australia, the local people, Aboriginal people, used to use the inner bark to make string. So a fibre plant
very
as well.
Fibrous, yeah.
I tell you, plants, they give everything.
It's 14 to 10.
Big backyard for Bunnings Warehouse, where lowest prices are just the beginning. And Backer Design stressless recliner free fabric to leather upgrade. The Beach and Bay Report. For Geelong City Motors, your Mercedes-Benz dealer in Geelong. And Earth Choice, make it your choice.
Mike, how's it looking?
Oh, still grey. I see you guys have got a few showers scattered around the bay and around the suburbs up there at the moment. And with the forecast of the breeze freshening up to 25 knots through the afternoon, isn't going to be very much of a beach day from the point of view of bare skin. But if you've got a jacket on or a jumper on, you'll find that the bayside's be pretty comfortable. Water police have advised that the search for the guy who left New Haven Jetty on a solo fishing trip yesterday afternoon is continuing. His boat, of course, was found near Kukunda, and it doesn't look as though with the air wing and also sea search undertaking at the moment that that may be a very good outcome. The guy was an experienced fisherman, and this is not a good situation. Now, a bit later today, Darren, and good morning, Millie, and good morning, Lauren, I'm taking my grandchildren down to a secret little waterfront micro village which a guy called Bill Bury has built over the last 20 years here on Bancroft Bay just across from the Meetung village. Bill made these little concrete dollhouse sized buildings in a private beach he's got down the bottom of his property here. And in the 1980s, he built these initially from wood, but storms kept washing them away, so in fact changed his construction methods and started using little concrete reinforced houses with chicken wire, and then he concreted buildings into place and then decorated them with seashells and then with paint. And today, Darren, Lake's entrance tour boats cruise by and the passengers are briefed on the little village, which has a Catholic church on the highest point, an Ephemogla pub, Anzac House with an Australian flag flying on it, even a lighthouse, a Qantas hangar, and the little village has got little cars in concrete, boats and roads all made of concrete. And there's a number of little residences, about 23 of these buildings on this little village. And today I'm taking my little grandchildren, Will, 5, and Indy, 3, down for a visit to Bill Bury's mini village. That's my day ahead. That's, of course, after we have coffee and meat.
Good on you, Mike. Enjoy the day. Lauren Burns is here. Where do you get the book, Lauren?
You can get it online on my website, just laurenburns.com.
Oh, yeah. No AU.
No, are you?
You've gone international on
us. Yeah, I've gone international.
Different presented Australia. Yeah. Come on.
How much is it?
It's $29.95.
And you know what else I like about it? It's on the wire. What do you call it?
It's spiral bound.
Spiral bound. Yeah. So when you're cooking, it opens up on the page and the book doesn't close on itself.
Yeah, it is actually. Yeah, I put a lot of effort into, you know, doing that because it's, especially in small kitchens, it's nice and compact. You can also pop it in your bag if you're taking it to the shops for ingredients.
And it was, you did this with a good mate who was a designer?
Yeah,
is that right?
Sarah. So, she's a graphic designer and we just put a lot of, you know, love and thought into how we'd, you know, craft the book together.
No, it's very good. Teresa joins us. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Millie, Darren, Lauren. Love the show. Millie, a couple of questions. I love your philosophy. My son and daughter-in-law, my daughter and son-in-law, seem to sort of have your general philosophy about food and practicality and all the rest of it. And I gave my daughter a dehydrator at Christmas.
Yay.
So I'm wondering if you have any tips, because she's just learning and they're moving into a new place in a couple of months, their first time. So have you got a website if they've got any queries just to see what you're doing and all that?
Well, I'm a really terrible blogger actually, Teresa, and I've had a pretty full-on end of last year, but I will get back to filling people in on what's been happening in my garden on my blog, which is just The Thrifty Gardener. WordPress or something like that. I'd have to look in my book to see what the address is. But, so I will get back to it. But, look, dehydrators are great. I mean they do use a bit of power, but I have one and I use it heaps. And I use it for things when they're overripe. So that would be my tip. I actually go down to my – I have the greatest fruit shop in the universe, Pompello's, in Seddon near me, and I'll often stick my head in and say, oh, is there anything that's, you know, on its way out? And the guys will sort of gather me up a bunch of stuff that's overripe and not really good for eating anymore, but it dehydrates beautifully.
And there's a great recipe for kale chips, kale is so easy to grow in the garden. It's so incredibly nutrient rich. It's great. Calcium, vitamin C, antioxidants, all those things.
Perfect time to sow the seeds. Is coming it? In yeah. the next couple of weeks.
Yeah,
too.
So especially like a Tuscan kale that's got flat. The bigger and flatter the leaves are, the easier it is. And all you do is you just devein the leaves. And then in a big bowl, you just mix it up with a little bit of olive oil, sea salt, some savoury yeast flakes if you've got them. If not, it doesn't matter. A little bit of vinegar. And you mix all the leaves around and then you just lay them on the dehydrator. And it probably takes around 12 hours on a low setting, and they are amazing. And my kids, like, I just can't make enough of them because it takes a little while just to devein it all, but they would just eat them. They're gone in half an hour. So they're a really nice snack. They're sort of, it's that salt and vinegar flavour that goes on.
Can you do
the
that with other
chips.
Leaves? Are there other leaves you can dehydrate in the same way?
Well, I've done it with silver beet, and they're beautiful. The kale is just a little bit more dense, so it's richer, and the sort of oils come out and a little bit more in it. But, silver beet's fine, and I'm sure you could experiment with other things.
Yeah. Fantastic.
We're almost there in the big backyard at 5 to 10.
The big backyard. For Backer Design, stressless recliner, free fabric to leather upgrade and Bunnings Warehouse, where lowest prices are just the beginning.
Yes, and we are there. I was distracted because Lauren has just signed a copy of Food from a Loving Home for me. That's so kind of you, Lauren.
Pleasure, enjoy.
And I've touched your gold medal.
Yeah.
It's been an exciting morning for me.
He's a foodie. He's a passionate foodie and a passionate gardener.
Exactly. And Millie, we bid you farewell, so thank you for coming in and filling in for Jane.
I'll see you when I do.
Yeah, exactly. And Lauren, good luck. And your website, again, is the best place to look and read about the book and about all about you.
Yep.
It's laurenburns.com. Simple as that. that.
That's it. Thank you.
And thanks for coming in and sharing your thoughts with us about food and being a vegetarian and other things.
Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. That's it for The Big Backyard. I'm staying here. Sunday morning is next.